Thanks for taking the time to download and listen to this podcast from CelticUnderground.net. This week is episode 5 on the game. It is a fixture and a performance from Celtic that was quite remarkable, very similar along the lines of the Partizan Belgrade game, except this time we went through, but strangely enough, it's not quite remembered and revered in the memories of supporters as the Partizan game. It is Celtic versus Tyrol Innsbruck at the start of the 1997-98 season.
Marišek forward to Severance. Severance looks to get the ball across. It's a goal for FC Tyrol. Kreener, the substitute, has scored for Tyrol.
Guys dressed in black, remember that, just in case we ever face to face and make contact. The title held by me, MIB, means what you think you saw, you did not see.
Ball swung in by Mahe. It's down for Donnelly. Great chance for Weikhorst. He must score, he does! And Celtic have pulled this one out of the fire!
Strange watching back, cause you never quite know where the MIBs is at.
Goes down the left, cuts inside, plays it through, it's a goal for Celtic! Craig Burley has put this tie beyond doubt. It's now Celtic 6, FC Tyrol 3, and Celtic most certainly are in the first round proper of this year's UEFA Cup.
I'm in your pens and doom, but then like boom, black suits fill the room up with the quickest talk with the witnesses, hypnotize up.
So this week we will be talking about a game that took place at the start of the famous 97-98 season. Anthony Murray and I are joined by Simon Murphy. So Simon, you've not been in the podcast before, so if you want to introduce yourself.
I suppose it's a bit of a funny one because we're going to get on to, my earliest Celtic memory is going to be the game that we're talking about. I suppose we should start by addressing the elephant in the room for me, which is the English accent. So my dad and all of his family are from Shotts originally, but I was born and raised in the Isle of Man. So the game we'll get on to will be my first experience of being taken to Celtic Park with my dad.
All right, okay, well, we got on to that game. Start of the season, 97-98 season. I'm going to do, I know this is about the guests, but I'm just going to do my own little introduction. We started with a trip to Intercabletel on the 23rd of July, which was my mum's birthday, and my mate and I was caught speeding driving down to that game. So that was that. We comfortably won 8-0 on aggregate. And then on the 12th of August, we had gone away, played Tyrol Innsbruck, and I got a 2-1. Defeat, which at the time it was in the days when you expected to lose away from home in Europe, and if you scored a goal, that was a bonus. So we came home 2-1 defeat. We had not started the season particularly well. We had lost the first game of the season to Hibs with a young guy who with dreadlocks called Henrik Larsson passing to Chip Charnley, and he'd scored, and then we'd lost at home to Dunfermline. And people were already phoning Radio Clyde asking for the manager to get sacked. So that was the context of going into this home tie against Tyrol Innsbruck, which would only was going to, if we got through, would only take us to the first round proper of the UEFA Cup. So, Anthony, do you want to set the scene culturally of where everything was?
A couple of history-turning things happened this month. Historically, South Park debuts on American TV and presumably Sky as well. So I don't know, there'll be a lot of South Park fans out there think, oh, wow, that's right, that happened. A little company called Netflix is launched in California, which sends out DVDs or something, I don't know. I don't know what became of them.
It would never take off this thing where you send people videos in the post.
You've got Blockbuster, who needs... Who needs a DVD in the post? And then, of course, obviously, shortly afterwards, England's Rose dies in a possible MI5 murder in Paris or car crash. Call it what you want. Either's good.
It's a great game that that's been picked here, Simon. For me personally, it was one of the last games I ever saw living at home with my mum and dad. Because your point about Diana died, it was great because I moved house into my first flat on her funeral. And a couple of people, Anthony, had were giving us stuff. We got a washing machine from someone and sofa from someone else. I hired a van and the streets were empty. It was brilliant that funeral day when I moved in a flat. I'm driving the transit van for the first time in my life. So having nobody around to on the roads as I'm driving around, it was excellent. And as the priest who married me said, it was the greatest thing the royal family ever did for Celtic because it got a Rangers Celtic game postponed that we then were more ready for later on in the season. So tell us more culturally about what's going on.
I guess the music blends into the films and the fact that number one in the charts is Will Smith's Men in Black, which is obviously a tie into the film that had come out the previous month, I guess, a summer Hollywood blockbuster. Number two, and perhaps has some connection to this match, Tub Thumping, I Get Knocked Down and I Get Up Again, which maybe it's the wrong way around. In this game, we were up again and then we kept getting knocked down and vice versa and vice versa. We'll get there, listener. What else? Backstreet's Boys, Everybody, everyone knows that. Notorious B.I.G. had died. So there were songs by him and tribute songs for him throughout the charts. Cinematically, the British horror movie Event Horizon, which some people think is a masterpiece, those people need to go back and watch it again. Emphatically is not.
When you said some people, that was obviously not you.
Yeah. And The Full Monty comes out this week. A film I've never seen, so I can't review that, positive or negative.
Wow, goodness, I'm starting to feel old. Right, Simon, because we've done the Partizan Belgrade game, and this game should be in the annals of Celtic folklore, along with the Partizan Belgrade game, for its mentalness. But for some reason, it's not. And I don't know whether it's because the Partizan Belgrade game was in a season of failure, so it was the only notable event. Other notable event. I don't know. So tell us about your life at this time, Simon.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose one of the things on the point that I haven't been able to get a handle of was exactly how good Innsbruck were, because you know they've since I think they've gone into administration and kind of folded.
Doesn't stop other teams, Simon.
Which, you know, it makes you think as to how good they actually were, whereas Partizan Belgrade, I think the fans that have came along at any point since still probably see them as a yardstick. And they've got that kind of name that kind of resonates with kind of, you know, European football, maybe through the kind of 60s and 70s as well. For me... So growing up on the Isle of Man, there's not many people that are kind of true, Manx kind of grandparents, parents. You're generally kind of, sons and daughters of kind of immigrants that have came over for work. And that kind of dominates then the football. So a lot of my friends were kind of, English parents, so sort of, a lot of Liverpool and Man United fans. And I had a godfather who was a big Liverpool fan. So he used to bring me, strips and things like that at Christmas time. And for whatever reason, potentially because of how bad things were at the club at the time, my dad wasn't particularly proactive in Celticness around the house. He was much more of a kind of a Leeds fan, really. He'd kind of enjoyed all of the great kind of Scottish players that had been through the Leeds team. And I think it also gave us something to connect with. If I was kind of talking more about English football, he could as well. But then, being, let's say 10 years old, just before the game, I used to like, Match and the magazines that you used to get. And, that was great. Put the posters up on my bedroom wall. And then about 6 months before the game rolled around, not knowing anything of it, I stuck a poster of the mighty Glasgow Rangers up on my wall because he's never mentioned it to me and I've never known any different. And, you know, he walked into the room and there was almost like this sudden change then that where we'd been kind of laissez-faire to a point, it was all going to have to change. And within about 6 months of that, I find myself on the supporters bus from Carf Inn. He'd obviously deemed that it was, you know, a big enough sin that I needed to visit the grotto prior to being whisked to the game, which sees me turn up then at Celtic Park on that night. And you know, what an evening to go for. If there was going to be a kind of an outcome or a route into you know, watching a football team that was going to hook you for life, then that was going to be it.
That's quite you can just imagine your dad walking back out and I'm going to have to speak to him. I'm going to have to have that chat with him. Well, he is about that age. Yes, I'm going to have to explain to him why Rangers can never ever be supported. why are they are the epitome of evil. We're going to have that chat with him. I'm going to have to break him out of his innocent world where he thinks all football teams are just a group of players who run about a pitch, and explain to him what's so evil about the teddy bears.
Yeah, and you know, it was you know, it still gets me. I can't remember so much about kind of the lead up to getting into the stadium, but we would have been probably, I think it's the family section that's kind of in the corner between kind of the main stand and kind of down the corner, the Lisbon Lions sort of end now, and you know, you get up to the kind of the upper tier, and then you've got that one last set of stairs, you know, if you're in one of the sections where you have to go up that final inward set of stairs, and you kind of, you get the that kind of small narrow rectangular view of the stadium, and then as you just get towards it, it just kind of opens out in front of you. And I just remember, like, all, you know, all the hairs like standing up on the back of your neck, because it was you know, if that's my first game, then compared to a lot of Celtic people, I've had a fairly privileged like run of things in terms of, you know, in terms of success. But that was a crowd that night where turning over a 2-1 deficit from the away game, you know, wasn't guaranteed, and wasn't necessarily expected either. And it, you know, just a crowd that was hungry for success. And even going back like today and watching that on the TV, you just can't get over like how loud it was at certain points, you know, when they kind of basically carried them over.
Yeah, that there's a couple of points, and I'm going to ask about your journey specifically from the Isle of Man for this game. But that was a couple of things that struck me, Anthony, when I was watching the highlights, was there's no North Curve designated area and the stadium is singing. The noise from a three-quarter full Celtic Park is amazing. To fast forward to present day, it is the one thing, the one consolation of Rangers winning the league this season. If they were ever going to win a league, it was a season where nobody saw it happen. So that's consolation number one. Number two, I think the atmosphere when we are back will be better at Celtic Park, because we will appreciate what we had more because we've lost it for once. So that's that type of atmosphere of that game is what I'm looking for. Did you notice that when you listened to the highlights, Anthony, the noise? I mean, that was the thing that really struck me, actually. Did you notice the noise?
Yeah, in a couple of this series of podcasts we've been doing, you watch back these games, and maybe it is, you know, the further we get away from our last trip to Celtic Park, which obviously is becoming weeks and months and years, it gets more and more spectacular. But even then, add that to, you know, it was a different time. You know, there was no, we weren't blasé about winning, you know. Yeah. So there really was that thought. I mean, you know, I was thinking this the other day, that, you know, that whole Chucky Arla, our day will come. Mm-hmm. You know, what's Irish for our day has been? Because right now that's what it feels like. But, you know, and it will be again, we know that. But back then, you know, we've come off the back of a couple of years of Tommy Burns you know, a real renaissance in the club with the building and the belief that we will be good again. So it wasn't like, I'd say if you were to jump back a couple of further years back, yes, we're still shit in Europe and we're doing nothing, but there's no expectation that we're going to. And this is, even though, you know, De Canio and Van Hooijdonk never delivered anything in Europe either, but, you know, at least we were going in the right direction. My family had had season tickets in the Wayne Biggins stand, which at this point is now just a gap, because they're now building that stand. So the Dunfermline game before, which we lost, and the Innsbruck game are my first games in the season ticket that we had in what is now, you know, a Green Brigade country, you know, in that corner. So this is only my second game up there, and I would be there for, you know, the next 5 years of games. And yeah, it was obviously much better than the Dunfermline one. This was a great night to be there. And I guess I would have been going into my second, penultimate year of high school. So I was young enough to go without my dad. And, you know, me and my big brother were going, I think, you know, getting supporters bus and stuff like that. So it was all quite exciting to be off the leash, so to speak.
So talk us through your journey from the Isle of Man to that game. Talk us through it, Simon.
We'd make it fairly semi-regular, a trip. I assume with it being, would have been the end of the summer holidays. So it would have been ferry ride over to kind of Heysham by Lancaster, and then my dad would have driven up. And then we'd just be staying through at my granddad's house in Shotts. And then kind of, you know, after that, one of the things that I know kind of tweaks and stays with me kind of from then is that I'm starting to want to make more frequent trips than what would be the regular kind of family ones. So, at that point, there was still a fairly regular service of flights between the Isle of Man and Glasgow. And so really at that point, it was just when it came to kind of half terms and, other breaks in the school year, trying to convince, you know, one of your family members to come and get you from the airport and take you through back and then just stay for a couple of days so you could get to a game. But it's just always been a part of life for us with, you know, going back to see family that once or twice a year you'd pack up the car and you'd make the drive.
So the stadium's only a year or two old, but this is your first game, and you've talked about the hair in the back of your neck thing. Is it anything else? So, for example, if I smell a pipe outdoors, not that you smell many pipes outdoors these days, if I smell a pipe outdoors, it transports me back to my very, very first game at Celtic Park, because that was the first time I'd smelt that smell. I can still remember we were in the stand, the guy sitting next to us kept swearing and then kept turning around to my dad and apologising for swearing and then we carry on swearing again. So is there anything specific that forever in a day will bring you back, transport you back to that moment, or is there anything that just to this day you still remember clear as day about that first trip?
There's not so many things kind of, outside of the football that necessarily bring you back. But like I say, it's whenever I go back, I'm always hopeful that, you know, where the seat will be will require that last little set of stairs up to the top, because I just find it's that last little bit of building up the kind of the tension before you go out. And like you said before, you know, one of the things will be that maybe some of the atmosphere of that night will come back with kind of, you know, being away from the football and maybe what we've lost over the time. But also I remember the stadium being much more full at that point as to what it would be, you know, at the kind of the same time now, because, you know, it was me, my dad, my uncle, and my cousin who, you know, would have been a similar age to me, just slightly younger. So although I can't remember exactly, you know, crystal clear, we would have been in probably half an hour before kickoff. They would have kind of wanted to get us out of the road. And it was already busy at that point. It was already full. And like you said, the one thing that always lodges in my mind that you've already got to it is when you look down, that there was just an entire section missing. And, it was just completely empty. And particularly with the way that the work had been done, you know, on the main stand and that, it was such a significant build. But then to just have a complete drop off on the other side, you know, was very distinct. And, you know, the other bit is more just that, you know, from that day forward, the connection that you have then with your dad and your family, you know, around Celtic, you know, we're, as I'm sure, I think most people, you know, in our position in Scotland, you know, will be parts of, you know, really big families. And one of the things with kind of growing up on the outside of that is, you know, you can miss a lot of it. We were always a bit of a kind of, you know, novelty kind of luxury item that, you know, when we turn up to family gatherings and stuff like that, people would always know who we were, but we wouldn't necessarily know who they are. But certainly, you know, supporting Celtic and getting more involved in it, you know, brought me a lot closer to a lot of my family in that regard.
So that's the sort of build up to the game. You asked, I just quickly checked, you asked what sort of standard Tyrrell Innsbruck were. Well, they could not have been more middle for diddle, mid-table mediocrity that season. They finished the Austrian League season that year, played 36 games, won 12, drew 12, lost 12. They could not have been more right bang average. So Anthony, do you want to start taking us through the game with Simon, because you both watched it.
Two things I'd just like to chip in on Tyrrell. Years later in 2008, during the European Championships, I went to Spain v Russia in Innsbruck. And obviously when I got to the city, I was like, all right, let's find the Tyrrell Stadium or the Tyrrell shop or whatever. And it was genuinely this, you know, I was looking for nothing because it didn't exist. And I spent all day trying to find, and even like saying to locals, where did Tyrrell Innsbruck play? And getting these funny looks from these Austrians. They're like, oh, no. They went the way of Art Media, Bratislava and Glasgow Rangers. They died. You know, so we have this, everyone we touch dies. But no, they're not alone. And the other thing I want to just touch upon is their kit. Because young football fans today will be completely oblivious to the fact that Nike didn't do kits. At the 1994 World Cup, no team playing in the World Cup finals is wearing a Nike kit. Whereas 4 years later in the 1998 World Cup, I don't know, they're 12 or 13, you know, Nike have entered the football industry. You know, obviously, if you go back further, Andy Walker was wearing Nike boots and stuff like that in the 80s. But as apparel, as a strip, Nike is there now. And like Borussia Dortmund before, Tyrrell Innsbruck are wearing a Nike kit, which we can actually see. Listeners can't see this, but Simon in the background has a framed version of the shirt. This is a mystery. Simon, please explain this.
So, you know, I think one of the things that people probably did during the heart of lockdown was a lot of people got involved in like classic strips and things like that. And one of the things, like purely by chance, I went on a bit of a road of discovery on a day when I think I was probably particularly down. I was like, oh, what was my first Celtic memory? What did I really enjoy? And started out, and the first thing that I found out was that they'd gone defunct. That was the first learning. But then the second thing was on a simple search just under kind of Tyrrell Innsbruck kits, the next result down was match-worn shirt from Tyrrell Innsbruck versus Celtic for sale.
Wow.
And I was like, I mean, it's a fairly niche item. I'm going to have to get it. And, you know, the story behind it, when you get it, and it has basically just a scanned letter, and basically it was Morten Weghorst, you know, I'd obviously reached a point where he played in games, or he must have been whittling down his shirt collection to which one really meant the most to him after some time. And he was able to let that one go, fortunately for me. So it's there as a reminder.
He should have kept it because he had quite a game that night.
He had a belting game, and I think probably, I don't know if it was because of the strong, big kind of Scandinavian surname that he had, but he was always the player initially that I was kind of drawn to as, yeah, he's my favourite player. I probably couldn't put my finger on exactly why, but I think, you know, you always want value for money when you're getting names on the back of the shirts. That's probably as good a reason as any.
Do you know, Anthony, I have visions if you'd kept to your comedic career, you would have had an award-winning book, Searching for Tyrrell Innsbruck. You know, that's your early 2000s comedians.
That's my fringe show.
Yeah, your fringe show would have been named Searching for Tyrrell Innsbruck. That's it.
An afternoon lost. But anyway, beyond that, for listeners, a very generic Nike shirt. You could imagine what it would have looked like. But anyway, so we're going into the game. As always with these, you know, it's trying to figure out who's playing where, you know, because you can't really be sure that the TV coverage that's on YouTube have got it right. And when you see who we've got, you know, Mahe has come. We'll start with goalkeeper Johnny Gould. He's already made that save away at McDermott Park. We think he might be better than what went before. So yeah. Gould's, he's not yet on the shit list. We still think he might be all right. Stephen Mahe, left back four. Malky Mackay, Tom Boyd, middle two. David Hannah, right back. Red flags right there. Midfield four. Phil O'Donnell on the left. Vikhorst and Burley in the middle. Andy Tom on the right, theoretically, but possibly kind of free to roam in attacking positions. And Larson and Donnelly up front. That's the starting 11. We start quite well, although the first goal doesn't come for half an hour. But if you watch the highlights, you know, you're seeing the things that we saw in these players, you know, Phil O'Donnell running at people, Andy Tom doing clever stuff, Malky Mackay looking a bit ropey. Stephen Mahe likes to put it in the mixer. He's like, I don't remember Mahe doing that a lot. I remember Mahe being quite good, but apparently he liked to just chunk one into the box now and again. But we also get a sort of first glimpse of Larson in a way that we kind of forget when he's a guy that's there trying to prove his point. You know, he is scurrying about, he's working hard. I know he always did that, but he really is trying to, you know, he's the new guy on the block trying to impress. And you can see that in the way, you know, he scampers around and is trying to bother defenders, bother goalkeepers. You know, he's trying to bam up the goalkeeper doing that. You know, I'm going to stand next to you while you take a kick thing, which, you know, is such a small-time thing. But, you know, when Larson does it, it's cool.
Basically wasting energy. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
What he didn't do once he became established in the team.
We say that. Well, we'll come back to this, whether or not it was a waste of energy. We'll get there eventually. So, 34th minute, lovely ball by Martin Vikhorst, clipped in from the right. And Simon Donnelly scores an absolute beauty. You know, a really brilliant Celtic goal. I remember, you know, probably top 20 Celtic goals I've ever seen. You know, he catches a volley, 4 feet in the air, kind of rotating, you know, textbook volley, you know, like, and fizzes it into the corner. Simon, what are your memories of that goal?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I noticed kind of going back was the fact that I'm pretty sure when Vikhorst plays the pass, his eyes are in the other direction. So he's really sent the guy that's on him. And like you say, it's a brilliant finish. But from the way that he set it up, you know, to have it where Simon Donnelly wanted it was brilliant. The only thing I would add to before the goal, which I then kind of had a look, because obviously we end up putting six past them, is their keeper goes off in the 18th minute. And, you know, the commentary team kind of, you know, introduced the sub as, you know, let's see what the young keeper can do. But actually, you know, not a spoiler alert, we score six goals. But when you go through the six of them, there's not actually one where I think, you know, him, I don't think we've benefited from the keeper going off, you know, so early.
I think the other keeper was their captain as well. So maybe he was like a ringer, you know, he was like the old pro that controlled them. So maybe we did get a bit of luck on this occasion with that goalkeeper going off.
Yeah, because you're saying about Simon Donnelly's goal being so good. It's so good that the Tyrrell Innsbruck defenders decide to stand and watch it. That's the other thing. They all part and say, he's going to score a cracker here. Let's just stand back and watch it. There's nobody near him for...
Maybe it's a case of that he's not good enough to do this. You know, what he needs to do to score from there, he might not be that good. And you know, everyone's made that mistake. I remember famously, remember when Scotland got beat 5-0 by Zidane's France team? And like Paul Lambert was brilliant for 40 minutes. And then Zidane got this chance to hit a left-footed volley from like 30 yards. And you kind of thought Lambert's thinking, he's not going to score this. And then boom, top corner. And it's like, ah, bugger. You know, you gave him the tiniest percentage of a chance. Obviously, that was Zidane. In this case, it's Simon Donnelly. Younger listeners will only know Simon Donnelly through two things. One, their dad saying he was shite. And two, him appearing on podcasts, misusing past participles. But Simon Donnelly was a decent player. I liked Simon Donnelly.
Just let listeners know, it's two teachers on the podcast here, not me, the other two.
I think Anthony would be a bit more specific on the grammar side than me. You know, I'm generally just checking that the colouring in is between the lines. Yeah, you know, the only thing I think, you know, again, you know, Simon Donnelly would have been kind of away and out of the Celtic team by the time I was really kind of looking at it with a kind of solid glance, you know, a few years later. But I do think on this evening, you know, whatever he needed to do for the team and whenever he was kind of called upon to act, you know, he got it pretty spot on tonight.
He was entering a bit of a purple patch. You'd probably say that this and maybe the next 2 months was probably Simon Donnelly's greatest run in the team, in terms of contributing to the, you know, scoring goals and you know, big goals as well. Yeah, Donnelly had a really good little spell at this point. But obviously, 5 minutes after we've taken the lead, a ball over the top, Malky Mackay does some Malky Mackay stuff, and a guy called Christian Meyerleb, who played well enough on this night that we were definitely linked with buying him at later stages, and he ended up playing in the English Premier League for, I think, Sheffield Wednesday, along with Phil O'Donnell and Simon Donnelly, now that I think about it. But yeah, Meyerleb looked like a solid player who obviously gave our less than brilliant centre-halves a bit of a run-around. But he just slots it in with his left foot. Then, so at half-time, or just before half-time, still lots to happen. We think we're at this point we're going out. You know, we've given back the away goal, so now we're snookered. Then we get to Larsson bamming up the keeper, right? When does that ever work? This is the one time in European history it worked, because the referee gives the foul for an indirect free kick just because Larsson's standing in front of him and he takes his time. So I don't know if the 6 second rule had just been introduced or what, but on this occasion, Celtic get an indirect free kick. Larsson dictates what's happening. Phil O'Donnell's the fake out that he's going to, you know, get it tapped over, and Phil O'Donnell's going to smash it with his left foot, which looks the natural thing to do. And almost unlike any free kick I've ever seen, Larsson just squares it to right to the edge of the D, and Andy Tom, as cool as a cucumber, slots it, passes it side foot, like something out of a passing drill with 10-year-olds. Just open up your shoe, tap side of the boot, in off the post. Beautiful goal.
Yeah, and it wouldn't be an event. You know, I think the commentary team kind of talk about, you know, they must have practiced this in training. Indirect free kicks, you know, they happen so infrequently in games that, like you say, it's a piece of magic, really, to have the ball kind of rolled to him, because I mean it glances off the post and you know no one's getting it, and within a minute we're back down the other end and struggling again.
Yeah, their right winger bombs to the byline, absolute textbook, cuts it back, and poor Henrik Larsson, with all his willingness, scoops the ball into the net. I love how pissed off he looks with himself. You know, as any old, like, it's not the Gary Caldwell, woe is me, I've scored another Champions League own goal. It's a genuine, ah, shit, why did I do that? Yeah, so we're all angry, we're all furious, and we go into half time going out of Europe. But I think, I don't know, I was still optimistic because I was young enough not to really remember the Partizan game. Immediately people are, you know, chipping around, oh, Partizan Belgrade, Partizan Belgrade. And it did feel like that, but, you know, that's a toss of a coin. It can go your way or it can't. And on this occasion, it was going to. That said, you know, there's, 15 minutes after the second half, and or 25, it's the 69th minute, when Larsson wins a penalty. Is it Larsson?
It is, but I think now, again, because I was kind of struggling to get some of the minutes on the non-events, but Andy Tom goes down.
Yep.
You know, just before it. Now he gets booked for simulation. But I think, you know, that one could have gone either way. So it's probably on the basis that two halves equal a whole, the refs eventually given the penalty for the second one. But we're enjoying a lot of kind of, we're getting a lot of joy down the right-hand side because Jackie Mack's on by that point.
Yeah, it's 55th minute. He's come on for Phil O'Donnell. Yeah.
Starting to cause carnage down that side as well.
Yeah, and again, like Donnelly, although Donnelly's purple patch didn't last as long, McNamara would be heading towards a player of the year season here, getting played as the right midfielder. Having, you know, we just enjoyed a couple of years with McNamara at right back, but obviously Vim the Tim, you know, trusted him more further up the park, or perhaps didn't trust him further back. But McNamara comes in and immediately, you know, is weaving past people and, you know, getting shots off and stuff. But we get that penalty and all those Donnelly doubters are, you know, covering their eyes. And not for the only time of this season, Donnelly steps up and roofs the penalty. You know, doesn't give the keeper a chance. It's a really, really good penalty. And at that point, we're celebrating, but we're still out. Because now we're two away goals down, you know, to our one. And it's, you know, we need to go and get another goal. This is probably the arrival of Henrik Larsson in a Celtic shirt. When Larsson gets the ball in his own half and does something that we wouldn't really become familiar with Larsson doing. It wasn't really his style of play, but he goes on an old play school Maisie. He just left, right, and leaves guys in his dust and just running at defenders and just leaves them diving in. And he gets to the edge of the box, he squares it, and Craig Burley, who is, again, brand new, pretty unsure what he was going to contribute to Celtic season. And then he gets a shot off, it takes quite a big deflection, and it loops in off the bar. And then the celebrations really start, because at that point we're going through again.
What's your thoughts? Do you know, very quickly on the Simon Donnelly penalty, that was the one thing about Simon Donnelly. He put penalties in the roof of the net. He put them where keepers couldn't get to them. So anyway, Simon, your memories?
My memories at that point, I should concede, you know, this is at the point where my dad's having to explain to me that everything's all right. But, you know, you could tell by that point anyway, I'm watching it back on the TV. It kind of brings it all flooding back as well. Like the place is going bonkers at that point. I just scribbled down like that goal was all awesome. And like, you know, what you were talking about in the first half. And again, you know, you'll see it in the last goal as well. It was just this kind of energy at that point. You know, he'd had a couple of real tough knocks with like the own goal and, you know, playing the pass through in the Hibs game. But actually, you know, particularly in this second half, he was really starting to just get the team ticking over.
Yep.
And then 15 minutes later.
Yep. I think that no goal sums up this sieve quite like a back post header. Whether it's Rooney Vata, David Hanna, Stefan Mahe, whoever's meant to be doing their job, this is just the classic Celtic in the 90s, letting in a poxy goal. They've worked it down the left, clipped it over, it's got over Malky Mackay again, and a guy's, you know, get the key to the city, just to a textbook downward header. It's a good finish by the guy. Gould doesn't have a chance. And it's this goal is very like Partizan Belgrade. You know, the mood drops. You hear the Austrian players shouting at each other. We've been done again by this stupid defence. And nobody in the building, you think, is happy at that point.
Yeah, I mean, it's a sucker punch, isn't it? Because it's 84th minute. I think, you know, there would be enough doubt with kind of what had gone before in over the piece. So, you know, with time to think that you're probably not getting back from this one.
But, and I didn't realise how late it was, but I guess because the final goal is so late into added time, I guess it makes sense. 87th minute, a ball comes in from the right. I forget who puts it in. Any idea, Simon?
No, I haven't written it down, but the one thing I'd put down with the notes for this goal is we've been trying an awful lot the long diagonal balls into the box actually through the game. And I think it's is it Jackie Mack that gets a knockdown, or he gets one for one of the chances in before, but it's certainly a feature that came up three or four times during the game, kind of that long diagonal switch knockdown. And then it lands to the man with the best surname in show business.
Yeah, Vikors takes it lovely. The ball is bouncing quite high. It's coming from his right, and he sort of shifts his entire frame, which is, you know, Vikors was a big guy, and he sort of thighs it with his right thigh, I think, but brings it back round a defender, and, like, you know, probably only like 7 yards out, dead center, just touches it into the corner. It's a really intelligent finish. It's the antithesis of those, you know, one when you catch one brilliantly and it goes straight into the keeper and he touches it over and you just think, just duff it into the corner. You wouldn't have got that. This is one of those ones where the guy does just passes it, flicks it, you know, pushes it, pokes it into the bottom corner. And I was a huge fan of Vikors. I liked Vikors a lot. And he would go on to have a great season this season. And, you know, this was the jumping off board for that. What seemed like a very important goal at the time. And, you know, we've revived ourselves. But Celtic being Celtic, we don't think, you know, we're not finished letting in goals here, potentially. So even though this is the 87th minute, we have it within us to blow this, which is very much the feeling for the next 7 minutes until we get to the final goal, which is Burley. I think Larson's just in overdrive again, just burning guys, running past guys, gets to the byline, cuts it back, I think, and Burley slots it, if my memory serves.
Yeah, I mean, what I really liked about it is he was simply chewing up the clock down the side of the pitch, and then he obviously catches a whiff of kind of blood and realises he can get past these guys and actually not sacrifice anything by going for a goal. And by the time he gets into the box and lays it across, it's very, very simple for him. I'd made a couple of notes just before. We had a goal. I mean, it was offside, but we had a goal disallowed in between in between 4-3 and 5-3. We had one disallowed, and there was also, like you said, you know, Celtic being Celtic, there were sustained periods in the highlights of Jonathan Gould demonstrating some maybe the Scott Bain of his time, perhaps, but some very choice actions. He really gets away with one where he invites the attacker a bit too close to comfort and manages just to get it away in the nick of time.
You know, there's a couple of things that I remember about that was people leaving at the 84th minute when they scored. One of the things, because you know the size of the stadium then, you know, I'm in the north tier upper, so you know that actually it takes 2-3 minutes to get out. So the fact that we score 3 minutes later, there would be people who would have just been leaving the stadium who would have heard the cheer of us of the Morten Wieghorst goal. And the other thing that so rarely happens, but when it does happen, it's just so fantastic. It's in one of those games where everything's really, really, really tight. And with an inside, what you know, even including injury time, is the last minute and a half, we score a goal that means the opposition need to score two. And you know that's going to happen. That then, the joy and the relief of that extra goal, because you know that's the goal. The game is won. The tie is over. And so this 94th minute goal, which I remember at the time and watching the highlights, reminded me there was loads of injury time in this game. And he kept, when we scored in the 94th minute, you're thinking, that's it. But actually, there was still another minute played after that goal. But you know, that it's one of those few times when you know that's it. Game's won. You've been tense for 90 odd minutes and you can relax for the last 90 seconds. It's an amazing feeling. So did your dad manage to get through to you, Simon, that this was it? That Celtic had actually were qualified and were through to the next round?
Yeah, so I think, like I said, because we were two fairly young ones, we definitely saw 5-3 in the stadium. I think we got 6-3. We were just outside. But I mean, like you say, yeah, 7 minutes in between them. So probably, yeah, just as we are getting outside of the doors there, that's when we hear 6-3. And yeah, no, he's managed to get it across. And you know, it's hard when you're trying to go back and kind of put things into context at kind of that age, in terms of then going back and really getting into football. I think what was the massive thing for me was, like I said at the beginning, because I had lots of friends that were like Liverpool and United fans, and you know, I'd been given Liverpool strips and stuff, and that made me close to them. When we then go on and draw them in the next round, that for me then very much means, well, I can only have one here. I'm going to have to choose. This was so much better. And that's it. Well, you know, all ties are burnt at that point. And we were very, very unfortunate in that game not to get more out of it. I mean, that was McManaman's attempt at a Larson special, going all the way down the left-hand side.
Yeah, we just kept all running backwards, staying a nice, safe 5 yards away from him, just so that he had enough room to be able to shoot. For the whole length of the pitch, we were just running backwards, saying, well, just not close you down here, or somebody go in and just do a professional foul and put you up in the air. We're just going to keep you in line. You run the length of Celtic Park. But we went out without losing to Liverpool, so that might have helped you if your pals were Liverpool fans. Any other comments about the game, Anthony?
It's just an interesting one. I'd say if it wasn't for the 6-2 game a couple of years later, I would probably rank this as the best game that I was ever at. I don't live in Scotland anymore, so I haven't been to any the multiple Rodgers era 5-0s and 5-1s. I wish I was. But you know, the 6-2 stands alone in my memory as the greatest game I'll probably ever see. And but before that, it was very much this. This was so much fun, so exciting. A real basketball game, you know, to use a cliche, back and forth. And when it goes your way, it couldn't be more satisfying. To see, you know, Donnelly, Wieghorst, Burley, all, you know, the goal scorers all go on to, you know, real heroes of the, you know, the stopping the 10 sort of thing. Andy Tom is obviously away by January, and then, you know, Larson becomes Larson. But yeah, you do see the formation of guys that would go on to play a big part in an interesting season for the Celtic. And it was all very exciting.
I mean, that's the thing, Simon. This team, from the middle forward, we've got O'Donnell, Burley, Wieghorst, Donnelly, Larson, Tom. You know, it's quite a there's quite an array of goal scoring talent from the middle of the park forwards in this team.
Yeah, and you know, it's I suppose it's kind of the way that football's probably changed as well over time. Like, even when you look at Innsbruck, you know, I think they were set up with two forwards as well. it was a fairly ambitious kind of way of playing. And when you look at the season as a whole, you know, going on to win the league, if you look at it against, like Anthony was alluded to, you know, some of the Rodgers years, we'd have been much more consistent in terms of results through those. Whereas, you know, we're losing games to very random teams, like over the course of the season, probably as a result of playing some fairly kind of ambitious attacking football. One of the things that stood out to me just about the game, just about maybe the difference of play, Celtic had 18 corners. Tyrrell only had two. There was obviously a bit of a difference in the way they were playing. And the other thing that made me laugh, just to go back to the beginning, and, you know, I don't want to dedicate the podcast to Princess Di, but on the Celtic wiki, it has the back pages of the papers. I can't remember which paper it is, but the lead-in is that Celtic were going in and out of Europe more often than Princess Di and Dodi Fayed. That was the write-up in the kind of the bold text at the beginning of the piece. So, you know, a big week by all accounts, yeah.
Celtic were in and out of Europe more often than Princess Di and Dodi Fayed before they booked their place in the first round of the UEFA Cup with a brilliant late double. written by Gary Rolson, who's a big hun. So, there you go.
The other thing looking at this team is just how times have changed, you know, the economics of football, to think that, to look at this team now, it's like, all right, how do we stop the 10 in a row here? We go and buy Denmark's captain and a European Cup winning centre mid. Well, I don't know who the equivalents, who won the European Cup last year, like as we speak?
Munich?
Bayern Munich. Aye, so imagine we went out and bought, I don't know, Thiago Alcantara and whoever Mark Reaper is today. Do you know what I mean? It's just, we know it's not Shane Duffy, but, you know, some English Premier League centre-half. That's how we upgrade from this team. And just the impossibility of doing that now is kind of terrifying and sad.
Yeah, but we still have Johnny Gould in goals.
Yeah, true.
but we were still hanging on. You know, I think I've heard you guys talk about before as well at the beginning of the O'Neill years, you know, when you come to like buying Chris Sutton and things like that, you know, how we were still able to compete in terms of finances against other teams. And yeah, it's only in the past sort of decade that things have really kind of ramped up against us. We did strengthen really well. And I mean, there's players that we were buying at that point that I don't think even, because obviously Lambert doesn't feature, does he, until kind of later on, that come in to bolster the team.
So that's us. Is that you, Grip? So that's you, Grip, as a Celtic fan for life. I take it you are pestering to go back as soon as possible to the next Celtic game.
Yeah. So I can't remember exactly the next game I get back to, but the one that sticks in my mind is we win at Ibrox at Christmas, don't we?
Yeah.
We win 2-0. I think there's
Celtic Park.
At Celtic Park.
Yeah.
And I just remember by that point, this full awareness of how big that year was, and how it was absolutely vital that we won the league that year. So in that kind of, you know, 5-6 month period of time, I'd obviously taken all of my, you know, entry level examinations, you know, getting to know the history, as it were, and then was coming down to that game and just, you know, what a big deal that was to move it on. I should probably say, like, while I'm here, one of the things, you know, was massive was, like I said before, you know, wanting to get to games more frequently than my dad was able to go up. And, you know, one of my cousins, I'd, you know, never really met him properly before, but he became like the, you know, the brother I'd never had type thing. If I wanted to do Celtic, he was going to help me to do Celtic. Whether that was, you know, while he was drinking Buckfast, he was getting me Bacardi Breezes or whatever at the age of 13 and 14 in the car parks outside the stadiums. But, you know, he brought me into the fold, as it were, to just to gain that kind of that love of the club.
You can take the lad out of shorts. You can't take the shorts out of the lad.
Hey, you should do this for a living, Anthony. but with that, and as I say, it's one of those games that I'm just amazed. No more, you don't hear Celtic fans talk about this game more. You'll even hear people talk about, Henrik Larsson, who passed the ball to Chick Charnley in one of his first games for Celtic. And you never hear people say Henrik Larsson, who scored an OG in one of his first games at Celtic Park.
It was a great one as well, though. It was a brilliant finish.
Well, it's just sort of a back flick with his left foot as he's running fast. I mean, I know he's trying to jump out of the way, but...
the keeper's getting nowhere near it. It's deftly flicked over his head, yeah.
Should always be remembered that his first and last competitive goals at Celtic Park were against us. And he outscored Chris Boyd.
Yeah, outscored Chris Boyd, and Morelos has now just equaled Larsson's goal-scoring record against Celtic. And with that... Simon and Anthony, I will say thanks very much.
Cheers.
Yeah, thank you.
So I hope you enjoyed that and brought back fantastic memories of just being in Celtic Park, which I'm sure none of us can wait to get back to. A lot of talk about what we do. For me, it's very interesting that the election turnout was record levels in Holyrood. You can't book restaurants for months at a time. I think there'll be more of us back at Celtic Park than some people are saying, particularly once the new manager is appointed. Anyway, enough of me. There will absolutely be a podcast along soon. This is me, Harry Brady. That was Simon and Anthony saying goodnight and God bless. Good night. We straight don't exist, no names and no fingerprints. Saw something strange watching back, cause you never quite know where the MIBs is at. From the deepest of the darkest of night on the horizon, bright light into sight tight. Camera zoom on the impending doom, but then like boom, black suits fill the room up with the quickness. Talk with the witnesses, hypnotize up, normalize up. Vivid memories turn to fantasies. Ain't no MIBs, can I please? Do what we say, that's the way we kick it. Yeah, I mean, or skip a noisy cricket, get wicked on you. We're your first, last, and only line of defense against the worst scum of the universe. So don't fear us, cheer us. If you ever get near us, don't jeer us. We're fearless, and my bees freezing up all the flag. That's it for men in black. And let me see you just bounce it with me, just bounce with me, just bounce it with me. Come on, let me see you just slide with me, just slide with me, just slide with me. Come on, let me see you take a walk with me, just walk it with me, take a walk with me. Come on, let me make your neck work. Now freeze. Tell you this in closing, I know we might seem imposing, but trust me, if we ever show in your section, believe me, it's for your own protection. Cause we see things that you need not see, and we be places that you need not be. So go with your life, forget the Roswell crap, show love to the black suit. Cause that's the men in, that's the men in. Here come the men in black. Here we come, galaxy defenders. They won't let you remember. Sorry.